would not intentionally spray my children with or family with toxic arrows, but as you must know, 80% or better do not have any family or children.
I have contacted the Virginia Pollution Control Board, National Weather Service, Oceana and Damneck military bases, NOAA, NASA, the Department of Defense, Brookhaven National Laboratory, the Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, the Health Department, the Department of Travel, countless federal agents and operators, the Virginia Beach Police Department, and even the White House, all to no avail.
Indigo pilots are chosen from the top ranks within the Air Force, Navy, and Coast Guard. Most of the pilots are, quote, hardened to humanity, unquote, and could care less about killing off unwanted or leeching aspects of America and the world. I swear to you, the majority of the pilots are like machines. I call them tanker terminators. We are paid more than any other pilot for our service, other than Air Force One pilots, who make as much or more and are kept in a dark secret world for their own protection.
There is a rising international concern about the existence of airborne chemical spraying, bolstered by a growing body of scientific evidence. What is in the air that we are breathing?
A decade and a half into public radar, the fight against aerial geoengineering has shifted from fringe suspicion to a populist front line against unelected technocrats playing God with the atmosphere.
We're in a war. This is a war against me, you, our children, our grandchildren, and generations to come. This is war raised upon us.
These programs consist of spraying tons of patented aerosol pollutants into our skies without public consent. This includes aluminum, barium, strontium, and more.
I don't want some creep ramming chemicals down my throat without my permission.
Pushback has finally reached the EPA and the HHS, now forced to at least pretend to look into it amid mounting state-level revolts. The Environmental Protection Agency established public reporting systems and launched dedicated web resources on contrails and geoengineering, claiming total transparency.
In the case of stratospheric aerosol injection, it's not like it's thoroughly studied, it's approved, it's trusted. Instead, you have people who just want to do it on their own, like try to get themselves someone to hand over $1 billion to just go dump a whole bunch of sulfur dioxide into the stratosphere. There are entities and people who would want to drastically scale these activities up.
In multiple states, including Florida, Tennessee, and Montana, legislation passed or advanced outright prohibiting weather modification and geoengineering, with bills in over a dozen other states demanding investigations into suspected atmospheric tampering. A federal Clear Skies Act proposal seeks to ban such activities nationwide, complete with EPA-led probes into public complaints.
And we have documents to prove the existence of these programs going back decades, documents hundreds of pages long. We have an 800-page U.S. Senate document from 1978 outlining the scope and scale of these programs then, specifically calling for intergovernmental cooperation, even between, quote, otherwise adversarial nations, because of the cross-border ramifications of these programs. You can't just geoengineer over your own country. Who's the biggest player? Obviously, the United States of America, because of the size of our military. The U.S. military has three times more aerial tankers, which are the primary aircraft used in these operations, three times more than all other militaries in the world combined.
Soil, water, and snow samples across the heartland still show anomalous metal spikes correlating with heavy spray days, while respiratory issues, brain fog, crop failures, and bizarre weather patterns fuel demands for real answers.
The amount of aluminum in our soil now is 5 to 10 times higher than it was even last year.
They're now creating crops that aren't bothered by aluminum. It's like, okay, well, we're going to pump the skies full of aluminum. Then you're going to be forced to buy our aluminum-resistant seeds to survive, which is just crazy.
What began as bold vows to expose the aerial spraying of aluminum, barium, and strontium has been reduced to bureaucratic whispers. Kennedy's warnings of stratospheric aerosol injections and weather weaponization have been abandoned. Another knife in the back from those who swore they'd stand with the people against the globalist experiment over our heads. John Bowne, reporting for Info.
I know you're the big big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier it would. I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexshowstore.com.
March. The Empire is on the run. Broadcasting live from the UN stronghold, Austin, Texas. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, third hour of The Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon now. 14th of April, joined by Kyle Serafin. You know him well. You can find him online at KyleSerafin.com and on Truth Social, X, YouTube, everywhere at Kyle Serafin and the Kyle Serafin Show, .podbean.com, as well as on Rumble. Just type Kyle Serafin. You'll find him everywhere. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've seen you, Harrison. Good to see you.
It's been a while. And what a crazy news cycle that we find ourselves in. Some breaking news. We have a new accuser of Eric Swalwell as his entire career goes down in flames. Have you been following this? What's your take on the latest with Eric Swalwell?
I kind of zoom out a little bit further when I look at what's going on there, because I think Eric Swalwell, he's a symptom of a bigger disease.
Exactly.
Which is that we keep electing people that are morally flawed and they're kind of bankrupt. I discussed it this morning on my program, but I remember being in high school. This is going back to like 98, 99. And I was sitting in there and it was like a, you know, American government AP class, something like this. And the instructor was discussing the phenomenon of horribly low favorability ratings for Congress as an institution.
Right.
But generally speaking, pretty high ratings for people's individual congressperson. And sort of how does that even work? And the game is the same, and it's every single political advertisement you've heard in your entire life that I've heard in my life, and everybody in your audience, no matter how old they are, has also heard. It's the same thing. It goes like this. There's corruption. There's bad things. I'm going to go to Washington to fight for whatever it is you like. I'm going to fight for energy. I'm going to fight for reindustrialization. I'm going to fight for your values, whatever it is. They're going to fight for something because they're a bunch of crooks, and I'm a really good guy. Yeah. And I've got to go there to fight against the crooks. So send me to go fight with the crooks. And then we're supposed to believe that they go there and they don't become the crooks that they're theoretically fighting against. When in fact, my guess is most of those people are already kind of morally flexible. They're already kind of soft on whatever it is. And they're already kind of impressionable. And then they show up and then all they got to do is do a couple of bad things in the right people's attention span. And then you're owned forever. Mm-hmm. My buddy Steve Baker refers to it as the Praetorian Guard. But this is the individual members of the United States Capitol Police that do a lot of the security work for Congress people. Who knows your secrets better than the people that protect you? I mean, right. There's an idea that you would have that in the Secret Service. They keep that quiet, right? There's an muerta. They're supposed to kind of keep their mouths shut. Whatever they see, it doesn't go any further. That's kind of a general thing in security details. People forget that the United States Capitol Police are doing that for members of Congress. They also have all the dirt for however long these people live. And a lot of these people are in there for 15, 20, 30 years. So you think they don't have the goods on them, and they can lean and they scratch each other's backs. And I think that's what we're seeing with Eric Swalwell. When you become politically inconvenient, maybe you're stepping up and we want to put somebody else into the space. We'll just destroy you with the stuff that we've had. We've got the file on you already, whoever it is. You know, it's like, too bad you did all those stupid things when you thought you were invincible, because you're young and you're attractive and you're fit and you sound good and you're in California. We'll just put somebody else instead of you. We'll just drop you out now on your head.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about what's happening with Eric Swalwell. It's not about him in particular. I have no interest in delving into the sordid details of this scumbag. But obviously, there's just a pile, a mountain of blackmail that's been there for years.
Now he's, I guess, you know, done something. He's pissed somebody off. He's gone against some power structure, and they've just decided to unleash it all. So, again, it's not about Eric Swalwell. It's about this, just this almost industrial scale blackmail operation. I've never seen blackmail wielded with such, in such an obvious way and such an effective way against Eric Swalwell. The man, he quits. He's not running for governor. He's dropping out of Congress. I mean, he threw his hands up and says, uncle. And apparently this has been looming over his head the entire time. You got to ask how this has altered maybe decisions he's made, votes he's made, statements he's made. For years, they've had this info. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, and last year he was really cocky about the 216th person to sign on to the Epstein Files Transparency Act. So he was out there saying, you know, I stand with women and sexual assault victims and all this kind of stuff all the while. You know, I feel like all these people are probably compromised to what, you know, degree. And you can't really set. This is why I think it's a fool's battle. I had a conversation with a congressman that I actually respect. And the statement was something to the effect of, I wouldn't wish it upon you to be a member of Congress. Wow. I was like, yeah, well, I don't want to do it. It doesn't sound fun. It doesn't sound interesting. The people that are drawn to it always seem like a certain personality type. There's a reason why they say that that Washington, D.C. is sort of like Hollywood for ugly people.
Yep.
And we're getting slightly less ugly people every once in a while, but I have no instinct that they're any better human beings, that they're, I feel like they're morally compromised. And so it's not surprising to us when we have that moment and these people end up being exposed for exactly what you think. I mean, take Tony Gonzalez. There's actually four scandals that are going on right now, two on each side of the aisle. One of them is Corey Mills, who's been credibly accused of stolen valor and a bunch of abuse of women, some really shady stuff that he did maybe with the FBI. And so you just read these stories, but he's buddies with Cash Patel, so he's probably safe for now. You see other people, Tony Gonzalez is also, he's resigning and withdrawing, and his scandal was really wild. Like, a woman set herself on fire over it, apparently.
Yeah.
So this broadly speaking, you talked about industrial scale and sort of the mechanization of a blackmail operation. That's what everybody assumed Jeffrey Epstein was about. Like, that was the kind of claim that was going on. And Eric Swalwell's claim was that he didn't do anything wrong. The allegations are 100% false. And he's dropped out of his race so that he can handle them appropriately. And he's got to, take up his his misdeeds with his wife where it belongs. Well, yeah, I do agree that you should handle your misdeeds with your wife if there are some. But nobody drops out of a political race because of false allegations. That's not right. How it works. Nobody disappears from public life or gets arrested in, something where you've had all this swirling sort of smoke forever. And then there's some other kind of fire, like, Prince Andrew's situation where it was like, oh, he was trading in state secrets, and that's why we had to arrest him. It had nothing to do with the fact that we just, have more Epstein releases. All of these things look the same to me, which is that these people give themselves away by their actions. Mm-hmm. It's a tacit agreement that there was a problem. It's as simple as the thing that Donald Trump just got into by tweeting out a picture of himself as Jesus.
Yep.
He's like, well, I was a doctor and I help people. Well, nobody believes that. Like, you'd have to be completely retarded to actually think that. So either Donald Trump thinks the audience are retarded, or he's retarded, or, people are retarded and they actually do believe that, which is all scary. Those are kind of the three possibilities.
You're exactly right. Although I do like that. I saw Alex Jones tweet yesterday, because I covered that yesterday, and he said, hey, at least he didn't say he was Jesus. There is that silver lining. He could have come out and said, yeah, I retweeted it. I am Jesus. You should be worshiping me, which, hey, I guess we're hanging our hat on whatever silver lining we can get these days.
But here's the thing. He deleted it. He deleted it, which is a tacit admission that he knew it was stupid and wrong. And like, am I offended as a Christian? No, I'm not offended. I just think it's stupid. I just think you're alienating people that are simple-minded. You're giving people a thing to go and talk about. And the incredible thing about that is that the news cycle should have been covered by multiple different Congress people dropping out of Congress because of salacious and scandalous allegations. And instead, it's like Donald Trump did some photo op at the White House with some lady who was pretending to deliver McDonald's or pizza, and he wasn't sure what the script said. She wasn't able to comment on anything outside of the script. And we're talking about that and him dressed up like in a Jesus robe pretending to be a doctor instead of talking about the really legit scandal, which is that our members of Congress are proving that they're compromised, which we all expected. Exactly. And they're just showing us that it's the case.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Again, the scandal is not, oh, Eric Swalwell is a degenerate. It's like, okay, yeah, duh. No, the real scandal is like, how do they have four accusers and two videotapes, and it's all just sitting there waiting to go. And you got to ask, how many times has Eric Swalwell come out and said, I think I'm going to vote this way? And they just sort of hold up the DVD with his crimes on it and go, you sure you're going to vote that way? I mean, we have no idea. We have no way of knowing. This is why this is so. It's not even so much about his morality. Like, okay, politicians are immoral. I think we can kind of accept that. It's about what that morality means for the functioning of our country and how these people can be controlled and manipulated. And at the end of the day, it's us that suffer. It's us that aren't represented because they're busy trying to keep themselves out of jail representing whoever is blackmailing them. I mean, it represents the total inversion of our governmental system.
I also don't see a lot of discussion about the other men that are in that video, which is bizarre. As a man in my 40s, I think that the last time that I was like playfully pawing at a woman, even like a woman that I was dating, was probably in my 20s.
Right.
It's probably 20 years in my rearview mirror at this point. I don't do that sitting on a bed with other men with my wife. I don't remember doing that with girlfriends going way, way back. I don't know what guy is doing that. And you have a man who's roughly my age, who's apparently a father and a husband, sitting there like pawing some gal. And there's another dude there, and there's someone that's running a camera. I mean, all of this stuff is bizarre. So when you look at that, you're like, what sort of terrible judgment? When I was in the military, we called it bad decision theater. It's like when you see like a young 19-year-old guy go walk onto a car lot that's just off the military base. And he's like looking at a Ford Mustang, which is like a, you know, it's a 6-cylinder Mustang, not the 8. And he comes back to you and he's like, hey man, what do you think about a 17% interest rate? They don't give those out to everybody. It's like, yeah, man, it's called bad decision theater. Like, I can see how it's going to unfold. It all looks stupid and you're probably going to do it anyway. That guy thought it was okay to paw a woman with two male witnesses, and God knows who else knew what was going on in there, on camera. I mean, it wasn't like the camera was like a surreptitious, you know, James O'Keefe hidden camera button camera. Somebody was holding up a phone, videoing him paw some lady and pull her back and mouth kiss her, who apparently was a sex worker. That was the claim. I mean, like, all of that, like the number of like stop signs that he ran through to get into that point is so numerous. It's crazy to me that a grown man would get there.
Yeah, it says a lot about their confidence that they can get away with this stuff, that they're not worrying, or they're just like, yeah, I'm blackmailed, I'm a slave, but at the end of the day, I'm still a congressman, so I'm winning. Like, maybe they're fine with it. It's like, this is what I got to do to get the power. Great, I'll be a slave, I'll be a puppet. I mean, it's good for memes. It's good for the meme culture, at least, at the very least.
Yeah.
Right?
It's so bad for everything else. Tom Massey talks about the pin, the congressional pin being the precious, and right, that as much as he can, he takes it off. And I've heard him say that. And I think that's everybody's sort of instinct with power. Look, we see it at every level. We see people go into the White House. We've got a president right now who claimed he was going to do a bunch of things with the power of the presidency, which, by the way, I'm not a big fan of the executive unilateral power move. I didn't like it when Barack Obama did it. I don't think we should elect a king. I really like it if like the Article I powers stayed in Article I, but they don't seem to want to do that. So it's hard for me to fight them as just a regular guy talking. But they don't throw away the things that are powerful. They don't throw out the intelligence apparatus. They don't like de-weaponize the law enforcement agencies. They don't take the intelligence components away from the DHS, from the FBI, you know, from the various different components of DOJ. They just don't do it. And I have to believe it's like, yeah, I'm holding on to the precious. I will wield it for good. And there's no evidence of anyone ever getting that weapon and being like, we're wielding it for good, because you wield it a few times and it feels probably pretty powerful. And then somebody comes to you and says, hey, by the way, it'd be a real shame if everybody knew about fill in the blank thing that we know about you, or all the stuff that we've been doing, or we've got this goods on you. I mean, it's inevitable that these people get captured, or they just play to your weaknesses. Like, you're talking about an entire government that's built up, and we seem to believe that it's run by these people. I don't think it's not. Because the intelligence apparatus is designed to recruit people in whatever way that you're able to be recruited. And I say that as someone who worked as an FBI agent who was trained how to like go and pick sources up. It turns out picking up sources is a lot like what I used to do when I was in sales. It's like getting a client. So it's not all that foreign to regular people. If you've ever done a sale in a business, if you've ever been involved in that, it's like you make a friend. Sometimes you need to make a friend with some leverage. Right. So maybe you got to do that. But generally speaking, if you're really good at it, you're personable, you have some things in common, and you find out, hey, you have the same interests as me and we want the same outcomes, and I'm able to phrase what I want you to do in a way that sounds good to both of us.
Right.
Well, that's great. And then sometimes you have a picture or a video of a guy hanging out with a hooker, and he doesn't want his wife to know. So then you got that too. So yeah. Those are two easy ways. It's like, oh, we could either do it with carrot or stick. They talked about it during the Twitter files. This is just every single instance ends up being the same thing to me.
Yeah. And of course, the NSA has been spying on members of Congress. That was like kind of a big scandal, but nothing was ever done about it. And they're still being spied on. So they know not to go against the intelligence agencies. I mean, they might not even know who's blackmailing them and with what. It's just like, oh, gee, they've got all this information. Maybe it's just an envelope under the door with pictures on it just going, hey, vote this way. I mean, this is the way our government actually operates. It's insane, but this is it. This is how it actually works. And you brought up Trump and sort of the promises that he made and the disappointment that it represents at this point. I mean, he's still got time. It feels crazy that we're only a little over a year into the second administration. It feels like this administration, the second round, has gone on for 10 years by this point. He's done some stuff, but what has happened, man? What has gone wrong with Trump? Obviously, the Iran war, obviously, the Epstein files, but the deportations, like all this other stuff he ran on, is also being shuffled off to the side. Are they trying to lose? That's what a lot of people are thinking, and I'm kind of on their side. I think they're trying to destroy the Republican Party. What's your take on how we've gone so wrong so fast?
That's a really, really hard question to answer because I didn't believe Trump was going to do all the things he said anyway. Again, I don't believe in like unilateral executive authority, so I have that going for me. But I do think that you can focus on priorities and you can hone them in and you can just hammer them. If you just stay in the lane of these are the things I'm really good at, this is what I want to happen, then maybe you move some needles forward. What I'm hearing is, Fox News is soft peddling amnesty now.
Yep.
I heard Stephen Miller go on and do an interview with Bret Baier and not deny that they were going to do amnesty, but he was phrasing it in a way that might be palatable. So, if you make 20 promises to people, then you've given me a rubric by which I can judge you. And this is what I continue to hammer home. I'm not making up like Kyle Serafin's priority. These are not the InfoWars priority. These are not yours or Alex's or anybody else's priorities. This is the Trump administration platform. This is what they ran on. So they promised a number of things. And if you give up on number two on the list, if you did number one, and good to them, they get total credit for shutting down the border. By the way, that was problem. That was solution number one. We need to, stop the border, stop the spread. For me, that's like a tourniquet on a bad bleed where we want to like stop the hemorrhaging. Fine. Great. They did that. The problem is it was done by executive, which means it can be reversed the second somebody else comes in.
Yeah,
but the number two priority should have been like the entire work, like mobilize every single part of the federal government to do this. It's go ahead and get rid of all the people. The largest deportation operation in American history means that you got to do something. That's a wartime footing. We don't have time for war with Iran. Yeah. If you're trying to do a wartime footing deportation of 20, 30 million people out of this country. And by the way, I think a lot of people wanted that. I think people on the left and the right wanted that. Because that also solves the things below it, which was end inflation and make America affordable again and fix some of the housing problems. It allows you to take away some of the resources from weaponized government, which was a problem. It takes us out of the foreign wars situation because we don't have the energy, the resources, or the bandwidth to handle it. So everybody's got to ask the question, why on earth are they focusing on different priorities? And then you get stories like what happened with Joe Kent, where he came out. You remember, we've already moved on from that news cycle. Like you and I live in this cycle. And it feels like that was months ago. It was only a few days ago that somebody from the Trump administration, a lot of somebodies, said that the former director of the National Counterterrorism Center was leaking classified information to journalists and the FBI was investigating him. And then what? You remember when he was arrested the other week?
Yeah. No, it just turned out it never even existed.
Right. So there's a couple of things that could have happened. Either we're doing smears on people because they're just saying stuff like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be in a war that Israel seems to have started, seems to have pushed us into. And by the way, that's not my words. It's not even Joe Kent's words. That's the Secretary of State, the Speaker of the House, and the President of the United States who said those things. I just listened to him again this morning. Yeah. I went back and played their words and they were like, Israel was going to make an attack. Any counterattack was going to come back on us. So we decided to attack first. It's like, why don't we just get out of the way? We could have just not been there when the punch came. Why didn't we tell our greatest ally to not do that stuff? That would have been good too. We'd love to help you. We want to see you guys succeed. We're really busy here. We have 20 million people that came into this country. And for all the talk about amnesty, which is like, well, we want the hard workers and the people who have jobs. If you are in this country illegally and you have a job, you are breaking the law.
Right.
And how did you get it? Are you using somebody's social security number? Because that's not a victimless crime, it turns out. Have you stolen from like one of my children and are you abusing their credit record? Because all of these things have follow-on crimes and we're acting like there's no victim of it. But the victim is the American people. It's the school system that's overburdened. It's the housing system where I have to pay more in rent because somebody else is competing for it and they'll live five families to a house.
Yep.
And I've served those search warrants. You know, Harrison, I've been on the search warrant where you see people from the third world that live like third world people in our very nice neighborhoods. And somebody's house is run down full of like 25 or 30 occupants. And they're dividing off like living rooms with a laundry line and a sheet hanging in there. And when you come in through the door, you're like, what in the fresh hell is this?
Yeah.
There's 35 people living in a three-bedroom house where one family is meant to live. And so they're degrading the American experience. We don't have time for other stuff outside of it. Like, that's right. Why the domestic agenda was a success in the election, I think.
And man, you know, there's videos out yesterday saying that 13,000 people have been killed by illegal immigrants. 13,000. It's like the second most common form of murder is an illegal alien killing an American. Just something insane. So like that's like very tangible, direct damage being done to the American people. Man, you talk about kids. I talk a lot about the school in Austin that brought in a bunch of Afghan refugees to the point where they started teaching the class in Pashtun. So the American kids, I mean, you're robbing them of education in their most important developmental time. That is beyond like just some, you know, stealing a little bit of money. You're actually robbing their life of its potential. It is insane how damaging this is to America. And then you have stories like this from today. The U.S. is short 10 million houses. Well, we have about 50 million people that shouldn't be here. So do we have 10 million house shortage, or do we have an excess of 30 million and 50 million, you know, illegals living here? Everything would get better. It really is the fix everything switch, deportations, and we have abandoned that. Trump has abandoned
that. Well, if nothing else, I used to have this conversation with gun control people, and I'm like a big firearms rights guy. I just don't even think that there should be any infringements. I don't care if you own a machine gun or a bazooka. Like, none of that bothers me, and I think that's the way it ought to be. So it's like, I'm happy to talk about gun control with people that want us not to have guns. And I have a bunch of them, and it would be like a big imposition, and it would really restrict my freedom. I'm happy to, when we've removed every other important, foreseeable, and preventable cause of death in front of it.
Right.
When you stop having people die from obesity and, you know, the CHF and COPDs and diabetes, and when you stop seeing people fall apart from all the preventable things that are in nutrition, and you've basically stopped accidental death, which is a big thing. And so, you know, you've fixed all the safety issues out there, and we've gotten down to the, you know, few thousand people a year that are killed with firearms, and you want to come and you say, hey, like, you're the last thing keeping society from being safe.
Right.
I'd be like, all right, like I'm willing to have that conversation with you at that point. I'm not sure I'm going to agree, but at least I'll be in good faith saying, well, at least you've handled all this stuff in front of it. We have the single biggest cause of problems. You have a burden of 20, maybe 30, whatever million people. You say 50. I don't know that you're wrong. If there's 50 million people putting pressure on our food markets, on our cost of fuel, on our commutes as we drive. Remember, there were all those stories about whenever ICE would show up in town in Los Angeles and suddenly there was like no commute traffic.
No traffic. Crazy.
How is that possible? So you think about that. Then you think about the dilution of what's going on for your children in the schools and the amount of attention that needs to go to people who don't speak English as a first language. And then the Afghan story is actually really poignant to me because one of my whistleblowing activities was going to Congress in 2022. And I pointed out my time on the Afghan refugee bases out at Fort Bliss, which is near El Paso, and the other one that's out by Las Cruces. It's called Holloman Air Force Base. It's out by Alamogordo. And I spent, there's 10,000 Afghans that came into each one of those. So 20,000 of the 100,000 Afghans came into my little area when I was working for the FBI. And what I saw was absolutely radicalizing. What I realized is none of these people got a briefing about like, welcome to the United States. Here's the rules.
Right.
They didn't necessarily know what they were signing on to come to. They just showed up here because they got on a plane because they knew they didn't want to be where they were and they wanted to go somewhere else, but they didn't know what the requirement was. And so when you're in a space where you don't even know what the rules are, you're now diluting to the tune of like 100,000 people who have no language, no culture, and no understanding of what our morals are and what our mores are. So they just acted with impunity. And so like, that's just a huge drain on law enforcement and our safety too.
And we're paying for it. It'd be totally different if they were coming over with $1 million each and wanted to build up America together. No, we have to pay for it. We give them jobs. We teach them the kids. It's ridiculous. We'll be right back.
So CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate-level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put it in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I went and did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesshow.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexjonesshow.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesshow.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesshow.com, and I thank you for your support.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Kyle Serafin. You can follow him on X at Kyle Serafin. Today only, you're getting 60% off all InfoWars-branded products on thealexjonesstore.com. Like I said, you've probably heard the term last chance a lot on this show. Last chance to take advantage of a sale, last chance to win a prize, whatever it is. This is your last chance ever to get official InfoWars-branded merchandise. We are shutting down. We will not be able to use the logo anymore. We will not be able to sell merchandise with that logo anymore. So if you want authentic, official InfoWars merchandise, you got to get it now. We make it easy by giving you 60% off. So today only, all InfoWars products, 60% off. T-shirts and hats are under $16. The InfoWars cooler bundle is a fantastic deal, especially if you're a VIP member, which everybody should be. Just go now, go today, because you're quickly running out of time. And hell, even if you just buy it to put it in a in a safe and sell it in 25 years, these will become collector's items. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, Kyle Serafin is my guest, and I know there's a lot going on these days. Trump is losing favorability sort of across the board, but especially with his most important base, people like non-college educated white people, collapsing in polls for their support of Trump. They're not the only ones. Support for Israel is collapsing, and that plays directly into why they're so desperate to get the Iran war done and finished and totally collapse Iran. It's one of the reasons why they really, really don't want a ceasefire, because they have destroyed their reputation overseas. They've destroyed their reputation in America, and it might not be this year, but in 5-10 years, that means the American government's going to be anti-Israel, meaning we're not going to support them, meaning they're going to be on their own, surrounded by enemies. This is an existential crisis for Israel. Can you explain this to us, Kyle?
I think regular people who don't care otherwise. You said that he's losing parts of his base, and that's probably true too. But the biggest thing that Donald Trump is hemorrhaging right now are regular people that aligned with him temporarily. There's an article in Axios, which I'm told Trump reads Axios every morning. That's the first thing he goes to. So I had somebody kind of explain that to me. So I look at Axios every day. And the lead story was the size of the shrinking tent. If you remember the way that Donald Trump wrote in, first of all, it was those 20 core promises. I keep them on my desktop at all times now. I just refer to them. And by the way, having no new wars, that was on there. It turns out that was number 8 on the core promises. It was in the top 10. Pretty simple. But the incredible shrinking tent, the way they described the actual sort of coalition that came together to put Donald Trump into office, they described it as a once in a generation opportunity. This is my frustration. I've had people complain like, oh, you're a whiner, you're crying. It's like, no. Don't get that wrong. I didn't ever have any kind of faith in Donald Trump. I don't have faith in men in general, and certainly not in politicians. He's been in politics 10 years. He's a politician. Let's call him what he is. But I did want him to do some things, and he did a couple of them, and I should be grateful. Like guys like Owen Schroyer are not in prison, and their felonies are wiped out. My buddy Steve Baker is not in prison. Enrique Tarrio, Joe Biggs, not in prison. That's all good stuff. I was into that. That happened day one, so very good.
Yep.
But I also wanted the rest of it. I wanted as many of that 20. I thought if we got maybe 40 or 50%, we'd be in pretty good shape. And we got like one or two of them. And that's not great. You know, I just paid my taxes yesterday, and I was told by a credible authority who ran for president that we were going to get rid of the IRS and fund it with tariffs.
Yeah,
I was surprised to find the IRS is still in business and still taking my check yesterday.
Yeah, I think I remember that as well. Should we just go through this list? Because we got it right here. It's the Agenda 47 list that they came out with. It's the 20 promises to the American people. Seal the border and stop the migrant invasion. I'd say he did that. He did seal the border. But obviously H-1Bs, like, that's a whole different issue. Number two,
600,000 Chinese students reauthorized. I mean, there's holes in it. But generally speaking, the border part, the porous border on the southern end of the border specifically, was handled properly. So kudos where it's due. Yes.
And of course, that just proves that it being open was a choice that the Biden administration made, which would lead to perhaps treason charges for them if we ever got around to charging the deep state. Let's see if that's on the list.
There's two pieces to that, though. Let me just hone in on that one more time, because this is also relevant. Not only does it prove that it's an executive decision, so just the will of the president was enough to change it, which is what they were saying the whole time. It also proves that there's no fix being done legislatively, which means that the Republican House and Senate that are not taking this up are the problem. And so, 100%. You know, like every single silver lining also has sort of the darkness on the inside of it. That's the dark part of it.
Right. And hey, don't get me wrong. I blame the Republican Party just as much as I blame Trump, the person. It's like, you know, they have completely and utterly failed up and uphold their end of the bargain as well. And it's just stupid overall, because they're not going to get elected. Like, they're going to lose the power they love so much because they refuse to just do what the American people want. It's just there's no making sense of it at all. But of course, number two is carry out the largest deportation operation in history. Not even close, Kyle.
Nope. Not even close. Not even like to the point where I've got friends that are working with ICE right now. They're federal agents that are working on joint task forces. And they said if they did what they do every single day in every city in America with the staffing that they had and no new people came in and they just pursued the stacks they had, they'd be doing it for 10 to 15 years. We're not even close to operating that way. And of course, we only have, this is the sad thing. You mentioned that it feels like it's really long in the administration, even though it's only 1 year in. This is the way that the game of politics is played for anybody who pays attention. You get 2-year cycles, which means you have to have enough progress by year one to be able to get the next 2 years to go with you if you're on a 4-year election term. Obviously, the members of Congress that are doing every 2 years, that's different. But when we start talking about the executive, you get 2 years to show that you have enough traction. But in order to get those second 2 years, you got to win the first quarter to be able to be allowed to play the second half. Otherwise, you get mercy ruled. And in the case of Donald Trump, we've already seen, if you don't win and you don't hold on to the House, you get impeached. If you don't hold on to the Senate, they may actually throw you out, which is even wilder. But the game has gotten so much more radical because we're not playing by the old rules where people used to do that, where they were sort of a gentleman's agreement. In my lifetime, we used to give the president 100 days where they would get their agenda to move as fast as they could to see what they could do with it. And everybody would operate in good faith. In my lifetime, you used to get 90 to 95, maybe 98% of the senators to confirm the cabinet because everybody agreed this is a president. He was elected. He's allowed to have the people representing him in his cabinet that he wants.
Yep.
And all we need to do is make sure they're not like, you know, foreign spies or some sort of traitorous people with some huge, deep secrets in their background. We don't do that anymore. We're passing cabinet members 51-49.
Yeah.
I mean, we're so contentious that we're not even operating on the system. I actually think the system is so weighted by the inefficiencies and sort of the non-functionality of it at this point that it's kind of inevitable that it doesn't survive indefinitely. I just don't know how long that is. And I don't think that means the world ends. I think it means that we end up maybe closer to what America was designed to be, which is a confederation of states where the most important government is actually in your state capital and not in Washington, D.C. That was the way we were designed. That's why it's called the United States of America, not like some other thing, the Republic of America, right?
Yeah.
It's the United States. We're supposed to all have states that we answer to. So anyway, watching all of that stuff and the way that the game has gone so radical in probably the last 20 years since I've actually been paying attention, it's really bad. I mean, it's really bad, but in the end, it actually may end up being kind of a silver lining as well. It's like, I don't think the system was designed that way. I don't think anybody that's in office is guilty of causing the system to be the way it is. I think most of these things go back to the early 1900s, like turn of the century. Yep. So we're talking about 1908, 1913 era.
Yep.
There's some real strong ones that happened in the 1940s as well. And so Congress stopped doing their job 75 years ago, 80 years ago. You know, we gave central power to the United States federal government in 1913, and we broke the systems that we have. I mean, most people don't realize this, but like you weren't even designed to be able to pick your president. It wasn't supposed to be that important. It really just wasn't. And you weren't supposed to be able to pick your senator for sure.
Right. That was 1913, the 17th Amendment. Probably the most important year in American history was 1913. And my belief is the income tax. It was everything happened in 1913. Yeah, and of course, the next year we go to World War One and the 17th Amendment. People don't understand this. It used to be that your senator was appointed by your state's legislature. So you would vote for your local representative to go to, in my case, the Capitol in Austin. And then they, representing me, would choose a senator to send to Washington, and they would recall the senator if he wasn't doing well. But 1913, the 17th Amendment made it then a popularity contest, which is a lot easier to rig. One big statewide contest is a lot easier to rig than 100 localities to steal a whole state legislature. So it made it a lot easier to rig and a lot more democratic, which I'm against as a Republican. I don't want democracy.
Yeah, no, democracy is the enemy 100%. And it was the enemy that the founders saw as a problem. Like if you look at what that actually did, and this is such a mechanism that people don't necessarily grasp, and it's pedantic, but it's so important because the system has been broken since before anybody who's alive today voting could have been responsible. So I don't blame boomers, and I don't blame the greatest generation or the silent generation or any of them. And like they weren't old enough to make these decisions. Those people are all long gone at this point. But it's worth looking at the mechanism. What we had then was a distilling of the popular sentiment. So as you voted, you know, I'm in Texas too. So we vote our people to be in Austin. Austin has a red legislature, even though they're like real squishy and a lot of stuff. They still were Republicans. So if we wanted a red state representation in the state houses, then we would get theoretically the same senator that would go and represent them. But it distilled what it came down to. So we all voted for our local representation, which is in a small little district of people that we would theoretically know, people that I run around with and, you know, in my county, in Williamson County. We would put somebody into the state legislature, and then that sentiment would get distilled, not like drinking a beer, but like drinking a shot. And so you would get whatever the strongest version of that is to be sent off. And if you look at the way that the state houses are divided across this country, you would have a supermajority. It wouldn't always be red in this country because we've changed differently and the dynamics have changed, but it would be a supermajority of state houses represented in the Senate. And then you would have functionality. You actually would, instead of it being a 59, you know, a 51-49 split, where we're maybe getting someone not showing up and having the vice president come in and break a tie. It should have not been that difficult to be able to pass actual legislation when it mattered. Instead, yeah. What we have is this series of compromises. And so they have to make new rules about, oh, if it's about money, which we have to spend, because God forbid we go without a budget. By the way, my favorite times are when the government shut down.
Oh, my God. They're my favorite. Couple of months, we got to go through that rigmarole. It's exhausting.
But here's the thing that it proves. Most people, and I remind people on this on my daily podcast when we do it, it's like, listen, you know that the federal government shut down? Oh, you didn't know because the stoplights all work, and when you turn on the gas at your house, it's still functional, and you flush the toilet, and it still goes somewhere, and if you have a problem with your internet, there's a guy that comes out. Like, the world still keeps turning because we're actually not Washington, D.C.-centric, even though a lot of politics ends up going there because that's where the big money comes from. It's such a dysfunctional group that when they don't go to work, nobody notices.
Yeah.
They just spend, you know, whatever, $7 trillion a year to let us know that they own us, but not in any meaningful way, because the minute they stop going to work, nobody cares. And it doesn't affect your life or my life or anybody that's listening's life, unless you work for the federal government, obviously.
Or unless they want you to feel it by making the airport lines 4 hours long by shutting down TSA. Yeah.
It's literally the only time most people interact with the federal government. Like, if you guys sat there and thought about it, you interact with the IRS when you call for help on your taxes and they don't answer the phone. So that's cool. And then you interact with them at a TSA. And that's basically just theater. I mean, you can look at the old red cell test they used to do. They would sneak 95% of the weapon components that they wanted to get through, to the point where, classic government answer, and I know this from talking to people that were in DHS and that were part of the Air Marshals program and so on, they didn't fix the security of TSA when they were having really, really bad red cell tests where they would be able to penetrate with bomb components and weapons and so on. They just stopped publishing the results and stopped doing the red cell because it was really damning. That's the world we live in right now. It's like, hey, there's a problem. What's the problem? People know that we suck. Okay, well, what can we do? We could suck less, or we could just stop telling people and stop testing to find out if we suck.
That basically like answers like 90% of the problems in the world. I mean, literally, anything you apply it to, that is the truth. I mean, look at Europe. It's like, do you solve the problem with migrants causing violence, or do you silence the people complaining about it? Every time they will silence people complaining about it because they like the problem. They want the problems. It's actually, that's the point. The point of a system is what it does, and that's what it always does. So it's not a coincidence that they keep doing it. It's just, you know, it's hard for people to understand, I guess.
It's also, as we go through these, and we'll get to one of them about election security, which, by the way, if you were going to tell me the central promises that I walked away with when I was voting, and I'm not a Republican, and I'm an independent that's very conservative and generally leans towards Republicans because there's not a better option most of the time. So those are the people that are walking away from this coalition in droves, the big tent that was talked about in Axios. The people that really wanted conservatism, knowing that Donald Trump is a 90s Democrat. He's not a conservative. He's never been a conservative. He's a feminist, first of all. So that doesn't make any sense. He's basically like a little bit left of Bill Clinton, which is not a terrible place to be. The 90s were pretty good. So for whatever people like to say that he is or he is not, you know, I don't think he's religious. I don't think there's any evidence of that. He was asked about the Bible. He doesn't even know whether the first half or the second half is the better half. He doesn't know anything about any of the stuff he's supposed to know about if he was a quote unquote conservative. But that's not problematic for the average person. What's problematic is if you make promises like everything is contingent on me getting rid of the people that are causing the prices to be jacked up, which is illegal aliens. And that's a simple solution. Like, it's complicated, but it's a simple like problem target set. And then the other piece of it is election security, because apparently we don't have secure elections, but you really want me to go out and vote? Like, I'm not even sure I'm going to vote in national stuff. I'm probably going to leave the national stuff off and I'm going to vote in the things that happen in my county and for my school board and for the municipality I live in. Those probably matter on the outside chance those actually work. But I saw someone say the other day that voting in America in 2026 is the adult equivalent of writing a letter to Santa Claus.
It's hard to disagree with that. I mean, but
it
you're exactly-
stings.
But it's like these are the root problems. And we can point to all these other things going on, but it's like, how did we get there? Illegal aliens, driving up prices, driving down wages, et cetera, not being able to actually trust our vote and actually get people that we want in power. If we can solve those things, a lot of other problems get solved automatically downstream, but we've not put the focus into that. And the blame I would put squarely on Trump and the Congress, because it's the Congress's prerogative. And Congress seems happy to give up their power. I mean, they're supposed to be the ones to dictate whether or not we go into war. They have completely abandoned that responsibility, and they're happy to sit on the sidelines as Donald Trump does an extended military excursion or whatever label they're putting on it now. So it's not even that it's a battle between the founders thought that people would be jealous of their power and they would want to defend it. And, oh, the executive's trying to, you know, move in on our territory. They don't care. They're happy to let the executive take it, and they can, do whatever Eric Swalwell gets up to.
They also assume that people would have actual businesses outside of just being True. Some sort of congressman who leverages the power that they have and the access and the information. They actually have recesses built in so people could go back and check on their businesses, because when this country was set up, the people that went out there and were serving in government, it probably was a real imposition to their lives. It really was service as opposed to what, you know, now people talk about public service. I used to hate that when I was in the military. They'd be like, oh, thank you for your service. I'm like, you know, they pay us, right? Like, it was a voluntary transaction. I showed up and I enlisted, and I took a huge pay cut when I did. I went from working in corporate finance to being an enlisted guy. I went from like $100,000 a year to like $18,000 a year. But I did it voluntarily. Like, no one made me do it. I wanted to. And I was excited about the transaction that I was involved. I was going to do training, hang out with people. You know, it's a very interesting experience. And so it was worth it for me. The idea that people are like giving up so much to go be members of Congress, then why are all the dirtbags who basically either one of two things, either they're super wealthy and they're going to defend their wealth, that seems like a fair number, or the people that really aspire to like get to the next level and they're dirtbags and they do dirtbag things and they have no problem. It's actually not that hard to be uber wealthy in America if you have no scruples and if you have no moral compass. That turns out, I know lots of people, I'm sure you do too. You're like, yeah, I could do that too if I had no scruples.
Yeah.
It'd be easy.
Yeah, no, it seems to be like the only way to get ahead now. It seems like if you're honest and trustworthy and a decent person, you're just a sucker at this. You're an idiot, because the dude down the road just, you know, pretending to create daycares, he's getting $50 million from the government. You're the idiot who's working 9 to 5 and paying your taxes, you moron. I mean, that really goes to the heart of it as well, right? We actually built a country that was dependent on self-sacrifice and like just trustworthiness. We have all these vulnerabilities that make life good, because you don't want to live in a prison. But if you let people take advantage of those vulnerabilities, they have to go away. And suddenly we're locking up the deodorant in the CVS aisle. So it's like we are losing the really precious part of our civilization, which is trust and trustworthiness. And that's like being deliberately driven out in favor of just schemes and scams and con artists everywhere.
It's almost like you're describing a nation that has Christian principles would be sort of a superior thing. The upside of being people who live in a nation that used to have Christian principles and are clearly deluding. And you could look at the numbers in 1970, like 90% of America identified as Christian of some denomination. Today, it's like closer to 60%, but we're still the majority. And there's obviously a major influx of people that don't. The upside of being a Christian is that you're not actually theoretically living for this world. So it turns out that's actually okay. The scammer will get theirs at some point. If they want the reward on here on earth, that's what they're going for. So you couldn't talk me into doing something that's unscrupulous and try to live, because I don't want to live with that. I don't want to set that example for my children. Many of those people don't have kids, I've noticed too. It's very interesting the number of people that have either no or very few children that are looking out there and they're looking like, how do I get mine right now, so that I can be Lord of the Ashes? Well, I'm like, my kids are going to be warlords of whatever you leave,
right?
Because they're going to be functional, well-adjusted people who have skill sets that are, you know, tangible. I've got my 8-year-old daughter moving a lawnmower around with me last night, because I was like, yeah, you want to learn how to push the lawnmower and how to use the self-drive propel? It's a little bit too much for her because it's a little heavy and she's tiny, but she knows how to shoot a gun. She knows how to cook an egg. She knows how to bake a cake. She knows how to do functional things. I would trade that over having $50 million and a bunch of people. I look at my next door neighbors and like, they've got my kids essentially in the future working for them, mowing their lawns when they have kids that are old enough to mow their own lawns.
Right.
I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want to be the person that is unscrupulous or doesn't have the value set, because it's like, look, I get a lot of value about what I do. I don't have to have it in some numerical number. It's all about, are my children going to be awesome people? Are they going to have a good life? And am I going to walk away and know that when I die, I'm leaving something that's better? If you want to be the person that scams everybody, but you're driving around in the Tesla, like, okay, cool, dude, that's you. I wouldn't want to trade places with you. You couldn't talk me into it.
I also don't want to live like Eric Swalwell, just constantly thinking about all the terrible things I've done. And just, I can only imagine every time he gets online, there's a moment of panic where he's like, ooh, is it out yet? Is the truth out yet? Okay, I'm good for another.
Today the day.
My God, I cannot imagine living with that type. I would, you know, you're gonna spend 10 minutes with some cheap hooker and somehow that's worth a lifetime of like terror that it's going to be released. It's like, who makes these decisions? It's insane.
Well, it does go to our core nature, which is pretty fallen. I mean, here's the thing. Like, every man has been on a business trip and had a pretty woman walk by and look at him once and go, and that mind goes like, oh, is that an opportunity? And then you go, is that opportunity really what I'm about? Is it worth anything? And the answer is no, if you're a smart person, or if you live like I do, which is that I assume the government's coming after me, because after I left the FBI, I had surveillance on me when I flew out to go move my stuff out of a storage unit. So I watched government agents follow me. Like, I assume everything. If I get a DM from somebody I don't know, I'm like, what are you trying to pull here?
Right, right.
You know, I got DMs from the Iranian state media. And when I got it, I was like, crap. Not only am I not going to respond to the Iranian state media for whatever reason they thought they were going to talk to me, I also now know the FBI is spying on me and they have access to all my stuff. And what I see, just kind of related to that, think about the fact that we have a Congress right now that wants to push a clean FISA renewal and Donald Trump is behind it. Literally the guy who got to experience FISA being used against his own campaign. And now he's like, oh, FISA is totally good. If people want to know how far we've gone and how far away we've gone from the mark, they can just look at the fact that our Congress went from saying we shouldn't be spied on. We have evidence they spied on us with Arctic Frost. By the way, let's give these same clowns that we haven't done any reform on, let's give them the exact same power that they want, because we should.
Well, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay, so they've been spying on us, but we want to stop them from spying. But if we try to stop them from spying, then they use the information they got from spying on us. It's a very convenient system the intelligence agencies have here. It's their, the congressmen are now incentivized on their own accord to vote for more and more FISA warrants and surveillance on the American people. It's just absolutely sick. And we hardly got through this list, but I think you make a great point of even just showing this list of going, no, this is what was promised. It's not us. We're not making up what we expected Trump to do. It was laid out in bullet points, 20 of them, saying what the priorities of the Trump administration were going to be. Going to war with Iran is not on here anywhere.
It's
and
not.
A lot of the
no,
stuff
No, nowhere
Trump's
in there
doing.
To say that we've always been at war with Iran. Nowhere, it turns out.
No,
it's just not there.
So why are they complaining that we're talking about it? That's the real issue. And that's what they want everybody to think, is that it's our fault for talking about it. If we lose the midterms, it's your fault for complaining. No. It's your fault for not following through on your promises.
Well, you guys were touting the low IQ hat, which I think is hilarious. And I love the way that Alex went and responded. You got it. Fantastic. I love the way that Alex was going on and he went with JP Sears and pointed out the fact that it's like, look, you know, I'm going to make light of this. But the real damage comes down to people not doing the thing that they said. And here's how I know that you can't actually change the system. We have a guy right now who's bad mouthing, you know, Alex Jones of all people, and he's bad mouthing him about being a liar. And he left the FBI after 292 days where he was in a senior executive position to actually do real change, to do a podcast. And so you know that podcasts and information is where the battle is actually being waged, because the people that theoretically would be successful are actually going back into podcasts. Mark Levin being touted by the president. There's a reason why they want to target that and why they want to tout certain voices. And it's the reason why President Trump, I think, actually tried to devalue the influence, because it's really obviously there.
I think that's exactly right. I think you're exactly right. They know how powerful we are in their scared. Kyle Serafin, incredible stuff, folks. Stay tuned. More on the other side with Matt Bracken.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones